Children of Dune by Frank Herbert, continued, Cassette 4, Side 2. Without Mélange, the Spacing Guild's Highliners could not move. Mélange precipitated the navigation trance by which a translight pathway could be seen before it was traveled. Without Mélange and its amplification of the human immunogenic system, life expectancy for the very rich degenerated by a factor of at least 4. Even the vast middle class of the Imperium ate diluted mélange and small sprinklings with at least 1 meal a day. But Alia had heard the mentat sincerity in Idaho's voice, a sound which she'd been awaiting with terrible expectancy. Shelm. The Combine Onet was much more than House Atreides, much more than Dune, much more than the priesthood or mélange. It was inkvines, whale fur, shigawire, Ixion artifacts and entertainers, trade in people and places, the Hajj, those products which came from the borderline legality of Tlaelaxu technology. It was addictive drugs and medical techniques. It was transportation, the guild, and all of the super-complex commerce of an empire which encompassed thousands of known planets, plus some which fed secretly at the fringes, permitted there for services rendered. When Idaho said Chome, he spoke of a constant ferment, intrigue within intrigue, a play of powers where the shift of one duodecimal point in interest payments could change the ownership of an entire planet. Alia returned to stand over the two seated on the divans.
"Something specific about Chome bothers you?" she asked. "There's always the heavy speculative stockpiling of spice, by certain houses," Irulan said.
Alia slapped her hands against her own thighs, then gestured at the embossed spice paper beside Irulan.
"That demand doesn't intrigue you, coming as it does." "All right," Idaho barked.
"Out with it. What are you withholding? You know better than to deny the data and still expect me to function as—"
"There has been a recent very significant increase in trade for people with 4 specific specialties," Alia said.
And she wondered if this would be truly new information for this pair.
"Which specialties?" Irulan asked. "Swordmasters, twisted mentats from Tlaelax, conditioned medics from the Sook School, and fincap accountants, most especially the latter. Why would questionable bookkeeping be in demand right now?"
She directed the question at Idaho. "Function as a mentat," he thought. Well, that was better than dwelling on what Alia had become. He focused on her words, replaying them in his mind mentat fashion.
"Swordmasters?"
That had been his own calling once. Swordmasters were, of course, more than personal fighters. They could repair force shields, plan military campaigns, design military support facilities, improvise weapons.
"Twisted mentats?"
The Tlaelaxu persisted in this hoax, obviously. As a mentat himself, Idaho knew the fragile insecurity of Tlaelaxu twisting. Great houses which bought such mentats hoped to control them absolutely. Impossible. Even Piter DeVries, who'd served the Harkonnens in their assault on House Atreides, had maintained his own essential dignity, accepting death rather than surrender his inner core of selfdom at the end.
"Sook doctors?"
Their conditioning supposedly guaranteed them against disloyalty to their owner patients. Sook doctors came very expensive. Increased purchase of Sooks would involve substantial exchanges of funds. Idaho weighed these facts against an increase in fincap accountants.
"Prime computation," he said, indicating a heavily weighted assurance that he spoke of inductive fact. "There's been a recent increase in wealth among houses minor. Some have to be moving quietly toward great house status. Such wealth could only come from some specific shifts in political alignments."
"We come at last to the Landsrod," Alia said, voicing her own belief.
"The next Landsrod session is almost 2 standard years away," Irulan reminded her.
"But political bargaining never ceases," Alia said. "And I'll warrant some among those tribal signatories," she gestured at the paper beside Irulan, "are among the houses minor who've shifted their alignment."
"Perhaps," Irulan said.
"The Landsrod," Alia said. "What better front for the Bene Gesserits? And what better agent for the sisterhood than my own mother?"
Alia planted herself directly in front of Idaho.
"Well, Duncan?"
"Why not function as a mentat?" Idaho asked himself. He saw the tenor of Alia's suspicions now. After all, Duncan Idaho had been personal house guard to the Lady Jessica for many years.
"Duncan?" Alia pressed.
"You should inquire closely after any advisory legislation which may be under preparation for the next session of the Landsrod," Idaho said. "They might take the legal position that the Regency can't veto certain kinds of legislation. Specifically, adjustments of taxation, and the policing of cartels. There are others, but not a very good pragmatic bet on their part if they take that position, Irulan said.
I agree, Alia said. The Sardaukar have no teeth, and we still have our Fremen legions.
Careful, Alia, Idaho said. Our enemies would like nothing better than to make us appear monstrous. No matter how many legions you command, power ultimately rides on popular sufferance in an empire as scattered as this one.
Popular sufferance? Irulan asked. You mean great house sufferance, Alia said.
And how many great houses will we face under this new alliance? Idaho asked.
Money is collecting in strange places.
The fringes? Irulan asked.
Idaho shrugged. It was an unanswerable question. All of them suspected that one day the Tlaelaxu or technological tinkerers on the Imperial fringes would nullify the Holtzman effect. On that day, shields would be useless. The whole precarious balance which maintained planetary feudatories would collapse. Alia refused to consider that possibility.
We'll ride with what we have, she said. And what we have is a certain knowledge throughout the Chome Directorate that we can destroy the spice if they force us to it. They won't risk that.
Back to Chome again, Irulan said.
Unless someone has managed to duplicate the sand trout sandworm cycle on another planet, Idaho said. He looked speculatively at Irulan, excited by this question.
Seleucia Secundus?
My contacts there remain reliable, Irulan said. Not Seleucia.
Then my answer stands, Alia said, staring at Idaho.
We ride with what we have.
My move, Idaho thought. He said,
Why'd you drag me away from important work? You could have worked this out yourself.
Don't take that tone with me, Alia snapped.
Idaho's eyes went wide. For an instant, he'd seen the alien on Alia's face, and it was a disconcerting sight. He turned his attention to Irulan, but she had not seen, or gave that appearance.
I don't need an elementary education, Alia said, her voice still edged with alien anger.
Idaho managed a rueful smile, but his breast ached.
We never get far from wealth and all of its masks when we deal with power, Irulan drawled. Paul was a social mutation, and, as such, we have to remember that he shifted the old balance of wealth.
Such mutations are not irreversible, Alia said, turning away from them as though she'd not exposed her terrible difference.
Wherever there's wealth in this empire, they know this.
They also know, Irulan said, that there are three people who could perpetuate that mutation. The twins and...
She pointed at Alia.
Are they insane, this pair? Idaho wondered.
They will try to assassinate me, Alia rasped.
And Idaho sat in shocked silence, his mentat awareness whirling.
Assassinate Alia? Why?
They could discredit her too easily. They could cut her out of the Fremen pack and hunt her down at will. But the twins, now... He knew he was not in the proper mentat calm for such an assessment, but he had to try. He had to be as precise as possible. At the same time, he knew that precise thinking contained undigested absolutes. Nature was not precise. The universe was not precise when reduced to this scale. It was vague and fuzzy, full of unexpected movements and changes. Humankind as a whole had to be entered into this computation as a natural phenomenon, and the whole process of precise analysis represented a chopping off, a remove from the ongoing current of the universe. He had to get at that current, see it in motion.
We were right to focus on Chome and the Lanzarote, Irulan drawled, and Duncan's suggestion offers a first line of inquiry for money as the translation of energy can't be separated from the energy it expresses, Alia said. We all know this, but we have to answer three specific questions. When? Using what weapons? Where?
The twins. The twins, Idaho thought. It's the twins who are in danger, not Alia.
You're not interested in who or how? Irulan asked. If Halth Carino or Chome or any other group employs human instruments on this planet, Alia said, we stand a better than 60% chance of finding them before they act. Knowing when they'll act and where gives us a bigger leverage on those odds.
How? That's just asking what weapons.
Why can't they see it as I see it? Idaho wondered.
All right, Irulan said. When?
When attention is focused on someone else, Alia said.
Attention was focused on your mother at the convocation, Irulan said. There was no attempt.
Wrong place, Alia said.
What is she doing? Idaho wondered.
Where, then? Irulan asked.
Right here in the keep, Alia said. It's the place where I'd feel most secure and least on my guard.
What weapons? Irulan asked.
Conventional. Something a Fremen might have on his person. Poisoned Christ knife, Mauler pistol. They've not tried a hunter seeker in a long while, Irulan said.
Wouldn't work in a crowd, Alia said. There'll have to be a crowd.
Biological weapon? Irulan asked.
An infectious agent? Alia asked,
not masking her incredulity.
How could Irulan think an infectious agent would succeed against the immunological barriers which protected an Atreides?
I was thinking more in the line of some animal, Irulan said. A small pet, say, trained to bite a specific victim, inflicting a poison with its bite.
The house ferrets will prevent that, Alia said.
One of them, then? Irulan asked.
Couldn't be done. The house ferrets would reject an outsider, kill it. You know that.
I was just exploring possibilities in the hope that I'll alert my guards, Alia said.
As Alia said guards, Idaho put a hand over his Tlaelaxu eyes, trying to prevent the demanding involvement which swept over him. It was Rajia, the movement of infinity as expressed by life, the latent cup of total immersion in Mentat awareness which lay in wait for every Mentat. It threw his awareness onto the universe like a net, falling, defining the shapes within it. He saw the twins crouching in darkness while giant claws raked the air about them.
No, he whispered.
What?
Alia looked at him as though surprised to find him still there. He took his hand from his eyes.
The garments that House Carino sent, he asked. Have they been sent on to the twins?
Of course, Irulan said. They're perfectly safe.
No one's going to try for the twins at Siege Tabor, Alia said.
Not with all of those Stilgar-trained guards around.
Idaho stared at her. He had no particular datum to reinforce an argument based on Mentat computation, but he knew. He knew.
This thing he'd experienced came very close to the visionary power which Paul had known. Neither Irulan nor Alia would believe it coming from him.
I'd like to alert the port authorities against allowing the importation of any outside animals, he said.
You're not taking Irulan's suggestion seriously, Alia protested.
Why take any chances? He asked.
Tell that to the smugglers, Alia said. I'll put my dependence on the house ferrets.
Idaho shook his head. What could house ferrets do against claws the size of those he envisioned? But Alia was right. Bribes in the right places, one acquiescent guild navigator, and any place in the empty quarter became a landing port. The guild would resist a front position in any attack on House Atreides, but if the price were high enough... Well, the guild could only be thought of as something like a geological barrier which made attacks difficult, but not impossible. They could always protest that they were just a transportation agency. How could they know to what use a particular cargo would be put?
Alia broke the silence with a purely Fremen gesture, a raised fist with thumb horizontal. She accompanied the gesture with a traditional expletive which meant,
I give Typhoon conflict.
She obviously saw herself as the only logical target for assassins, and the gesture protested a universe full of undigested threats. She was saying she would hurl the death wind at anyone who attacked her. Idaho felt the hopelessness of any protest. He saw that she no longer suspected him. He was going back to Tabor, and she expected a perfectly executed abduction of the Lady Jessica. He lifted himself from the divan in an adrenaline surge of anger, thinking,
If only Alia were the target! If only assassins could get to her!
For an instant, he rested his hand on his own knife, but it was not in him to do this. Far better, though, that she die a martyr than live to be discredited and hounded into a sandy grave.
Yes,
Alia said, misinterpreting his expression as concern for her.
You'd best hurry back to Tabor.
And she thought,
How foolish of me to suspect Duncan. He's mine, not Jessica's.
It had been the demand from the tribes that had upset her, Alia thought. She waved an airy goodbye to Idaho as he left. Idaho left the council chamber feeling hopeless. Not only was Alia blind with her alien possession, but she became more insane with each crisis. She'd already passed her danger point and was doomed. But what could be done for the twins? Whom could he convince? Stilgar? And what could Stilgar do that he wasn't already doing?